Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Saving Lives in Slow Motion. I'm Dr. Ayan Panja, and today I'd like to talk about food intolerances. Now, a lot has changed in the last 25 years since I became a doctor. And in general practice now, I was talking to one of my colleagues about this the other day. There are so many conditions and presentations that we see, but also a lot of queries that we get asked. So some very common ones are about perimenopause and menopause, ADHD, ASD, but also food intolerances. And it depends on what your GP service is like, but at our practice we triage online. So people get in touch with us through the website, put in their query or medical issue. And one that comes up quite often is the issue of food intolerances. It's a really contentious subject, and I want to kind of do it justice, really, and show you why sometimes food intolerances may not be intolerances at all. And when they are intolerances, what makes them that and not something else? So there's a lot to get through, but I'm going to try and do it methodically and slowly but quickly, which is my style. So the first thing that food intolerances aren't, they're not life-threatening allergies. So there are different types of allergies. I have an episode on allergies on this podcast, which is worth listening to, but it's not a life-threatening allergy. So what could it be if it is a real intolerance, when you're reacting to a certain food? Well, let's assume that that is happening. So every time you eat a particular food, you get a bad tummy, or you get brain fog, headache, you feel tired. What's going on there? Now, in terms of molecules, what's going on is you are getting some sort of partial immune response, and your immune system is essentially on the lookout for things called antigens. Now, antigens is anything that, if you like, enters our body, enters our bloodstream from viruses to other allergens that we're exposed to, whether it's dust or pollens and also food. And the process by which this kind of partial immune response occurs happens in many ways. But one of the key tenets is this phenomenon called molecular mimicry. And it's a case of mistaken identity. So sometimes, you know, if you eat a food and your immune system recognizes that food as another molecule that you might react to, you will get a partial immune response. And the example I always give is that of something called oral allergy syndrome, where people eat fruits and they get really swollen lips, and birch pollen allergy, which is a type of hay fever, essentially, that you get from exposure to birch pollen trees. Often at this time of year, between kind of, you know, February and April. Now, the people that have birch pollen allergy very often have oral allergy syndrome. Why? What is going on? Well, it's because of a case of mistaken identity. The molecules, the proteins that are in birch pollen resemble those in certain fruits. So your immune system gets confused and reacts to both of them because it thinks, ah, here's an antigen, I'm going to react to it. And in cases of food intolerance, in inverted commas, sometimes that's the phenomenon that's going on. Okay, so that's molecular mimicry. But why does that happen? And why can you feel that you've got a food intolerance when it's not a food intolerance at all? Okay, so let's talk about gut symptoms, because that's often what prompts people to get in touch with us. Now, the gut's really complicated, and I'm going to start at the top. So if you've got some sort of issue with your gut in terms of an acid problem or a lack of gallbladder power, so you have poor digestive enzyme power, or you have what's known as IBS, which is in the lower part of the gut where you get abdominal pain and cramps sometimes, particularly when you're stressed or sometimes related to food, then you might think that you have a food intolerance. So let's just go through these. So what causes that? And again, there's a whole episode on gut symptoms. But it starts really when we're born. So there's a few things that govern our gut health. One is the state of the bugs, the bacteria in our gut. And every generation that is born with slightly worse gut bugs than the one before. Lots of societal reasons for that in terms of farming practices and the planet that we populate and our habits. If you add into that mix things like antibiotic use and stress, you know, you take this individual that's born with suboptimal gut bugs, and if they get worse because of those factors, you're priming that person to get gut symptoms as they get older. And often the story is, you know, a baby that's born premature, not breastfed, has loads of antibiotics when they're young, bit of stress at school, suddenly they've got tummy ache, whether it's at the top end where they're getting reflux or at the bottom where they're getting IBS symptoms. And sometimes when you keep a food diary, there are certain foods that make you feel worse. So I've talked a bit on other episodes about FODMAPs, which are actually very, very healthy foods, but they're gas-forming foods, Brussels sprouts, asparagus, etc. And reducing them can temporarily give you relief from IBS. In my view, it's not really a satisfactory long-term solution, but that's just me. And the other thing that, you know, story that I just told about that fictional person can predispose you to is something called SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, again, covered in my episode on gut symptoms. So if that gets treated, suddenly your gut symptoms get better. It's not always the case, and not everyone has SIBO, obviously, but it's worth thinking about, because if you've got something like SIBO, you will feel that you have food intolerances because you will get bloating after meals, you know, after most things that you eat, particularly things that are carbohydrate-based. So this is where you have a faux intolerance. It's not true food intolerance. It's because there's something not right with the gut. And I've got to be honest here, this is not something that, as doctors, we're particularly interested in or trained well in. So you've got to sometimes do your own kind of detective work by looking at your story, as laid out for you in my book, The Health Fix. So let's just recap, because I want you to sort of keep this thread here. So what's happening on a molecular level sometimes is molecular mimicry. At other times, you will feel that you have an intolerance because there's a gut issue. Now, the third thing is more to do with specifics. Now, I'm going to use wheat and dairy as examples because they are very commonly foods that people feel that they react to. Let's start with milk and dairy products. So there are two things here. One is this something called non-IgE allergy. So IgE is a type of antibody, one of these elements of your immune system that recognizes something foreign and reacts. And that does give you allergy symptoms and can be quite severe. But non-IgE means that you're reacting to, in this case, dairy products, but it's not something that can lead to a true allergy. And those symptoms can be anything from itchy skin to abdominal bloating or diarrhea or sometimes constipation, you know, worsening eczema, just mentioned skin. And this, in a way, is very similar to that sort of partial immune response I was describing at the beginning. Often something that people grow out of as their immune system matures. And sometimes other factors are involved, like optimizing things like vitamin D. Now, there's another group of people that react badly to milk or dairy products. And it's a totally different mechanism. So this is, again, not really a food intolerance. And this is the group of people that are lactose intolerant. Now, there are two groups, broadly speaking. One is the people who are born lactose intolerant because they don't have lactase, which is the enzyme that digests lactose, which is the sugar in milk. So you have congenital lactase deficiency. So this is nothing to do with non-IgE cow's milk protein allergy, which is to do with the protein in the milk causing a partial immune response. This is because you don't have the enzyme to digest the sugar in milk. So often these people will get diarrhea. They just won't be able to tolerate milk, literally. And the other is lactase deficiency that comes with age or is a genetic thing. So, for example, I have this. There's a gene that I'm missing called MCM6 that codes for lactase, the enzyme that digests lactose, and I don't have it. So I could drink milk quite happily until I was about 30. But now it really doesn't agree with me because I just don't make lactase efficiently. So that's in my DNA. You know, I was born with that. So it stands to reason that, you know, I'm intolerant, if you like, of milk products. Also, when I mention age, the older we get, the less digestive enzyme power we have. So you tend to naturally run out of lactase. I'm hoping this is giving you some nuance on food intolerances in inverted commas. And you know, the ultimate thing is a lot of people want to get to the why of the why, which is what I'm like, but you can't always, in depending on what kind of health service you use. So if you know that you're not good on it, on a particular food, and you've tried an elimination diet for, say, a month, and you think, do you know what, I feel way better off milk, just that's fine. That's okay. Stay off it. You don't need fancy tests to tell you that. People often worry about the nutritional content of cow's milk, and I'm not anti-cow's milk. I'm not saying you shouldn't ever drink it. If you get on with it, fine. And there are certain populations, in fact, people of Irish heritage have something called lactase persistence, where their ability to digest milk, the lactose in milk, is greater than other populations. And curiously, that also goes for one particular area where India and Pakistan meet, called Punjab, where people drink a lot of milk tea. They too have lactase persistence. Interesting. Okay, anyway, sticking with the program, food intolerances we're talking about here. Let's move on to wheat, which contains a protein called gluten. Many of you will have heard of gluten intolerance or celiac disease. I think it's worth spending a couple of minutes on this. So, using the same framework as I did for milk, there's a genetic element. So almost everyone on the planet with celiac disease has one of two genetic markers called human leukocyte antigens, HLA-DQ8 or HLA-DQ2. And if you have that gene, and you won't know this unless you've done a DNA test or you've, you know, someone's done the test for you in a hospital setting, effectively, your gun is loaded. And every time you eat gluten, you're kind of like tickling the trigger. And you're more likely than the next person to develop celiac disease, which is a true allergy to gluten. And it is life-threatening. It can be. So you really mustn't expose yourself to gluten if you have that diagnosis.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
What about the people that react to gluten that don't have that gene? What's going on there? So partly, it can be molecular mimicry, as I described at the very beginning, a partial immune response. But in what setting and in what context? And often you'll find with this group of people that they also have gut symptoms. They may be the people that have SIBO or some sort of history of gut infections or sometimes autoimmunity. And it's, you know, it's poorly understood because there are these papers that come out now and again saying, oh, there's no such thing as gluten sensitivity. But then there are others that describe it very well. But again, you know, it's one of these things. If you, as an adult, know that you're better off not having it, great. Do you always need a test to confirm something? No. That's my view. Now, I'm going to sort of finish with this whole concept around testing. How do you test food intolerances? So again, there are lots of commercial tests out there, and they look at something called IgG. Now, I'm just going to go through this. There are three food-related immune components to our immune system. And they're called immunoglobulins, and they're and for short, immunoglobulin is Ig. So there's IgA, IgE, and IgG. So actually, I've done them in the wrong order, really. So IgE is the rapid response antibody, and that you see in true kind of allergy situations. So that's not what we're talking about on this episode. That is proper, true allergy. Then there's IgG, which is sort of a medium responder and a bit vague, but is often in response to foods. And then there's IgA, which is the immunoglobulin in our linings, if you like, the lining of our lungs, the lining of our gut. Really important for mucus secretion and is important for immune tolerance and general immune function in the background. Now, the commercial food intolerance tests are IgG tests, and people in the world of allergy and doctors don't buy this because they think, well, IgG is a response that's not completely reliable. You're sort of going looking for trouble. But on the flip side, people that take these tests and then they go by the results, and what happens normally, these companies, they give you like a a red, amber, green type readout of the foods. The red ones are the ones that you really react to in terms of your IgG response. Amber is a medium response, and green is go. You can eat as much as you like. And people do feel better. They seem to, the ones I've met who've followed this kind of advice. Where the reliability is an issue is that depending on what you've eaten, I think within the week before you have the test might be different. And I would really like to see some repeatable studies on whether that comes up the same if you do it more than once, a few months apart. And all the literature suggests that it's not particularly reliable. So the jury's out, but I'm telling you my experience in terms of what people report. But these are things that you cannot get tested via your healthcare provider, and they do market themselves as looking for food intolerances. So what can you do about food intolerances, inverted commas? Well, the obvious thing is to find the cause. And hopefully this episode has given you some more nuance as to why you might, you know, appear to be reacting to certain foods. But, you know, could it be a digestive issue? Could it be molecular mimicry? And, you know, thinking about the process of what's actually happening when you eat and, you know, what's going on, that's really worth thinking about. And maybe keeping a diary as well. Commonest food allergies, well, we've talked about wheat and dairy. There's no doubt about those. There's eggs as well, soya, peanuts, fish and shellfish in that sort of order, I think, are the commonest ones. And look, you know, as I said, this is not about true allergy. True allergy is that IgE response, which essentially activates histamine. And, you know, that is a true allergy. This is about intolerances, which is lower level, where you just don't feel right when you eat certain things and you might be getting gut symptoms. In fact, mainly gut symptoms. That is almost always the thing that prompts people to think they've got a food intolerance. I was talking about what to do to try and sort of minimize these things. Well, essentially optimize your gut health. So find the cause, treat it if it needs treating. Be kind to your mucous membranes. You know, that secretory IgA is really important. And that means all the obvious stuff, like avoiding ultra-processed, highly processed foods, because they essentially confuse your immune system. You're going to get an abnormal immune response if you're eating something artificial. There's a role for probiotics. There's a role for vitamin D. Again, it depends. You know, if you're someone who's got SIBO, sometimes probiotics will make you feel worse. So there's a bit of, again, a bit of detective work to do there. And, you know, sometimes, as I say, it might be something higher up in the gut, like poor pancreatic or gallbladder function, and replacing enzymes, digestive enzymes, can also be necessary. Okay, I hope that's helped. A real whistle-stop tour there on food intolerance. It's not an easy thing to cover quickly, but I hope I've done it justice. Thank you again for listening. Do share this podcast with your friends and family if you think it's of use. As always, look at the show notes, because I do point people to further sources of information. And until next time, do stay well. Look after yourself. Bye for now.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.